Hey everybody, what's up? Now, do you ever wonder why your best ideas come to you in the shower or on a run or just before waking up and you wish you could be more creative all the time? Now, if this sounds interesting to you, then I can't wait for you to tune in to this episode of the show, the Creative Insights Podcast, where we chat with inspiring entrepreneurs, innovators, and hustlers, sharing their great stories and insights. I'm your host, Mike, and I'm very happy to be in your ears today. We have an amazing guest that I can't wait to share with you. That's right. We have the former Vice President of Innovation and Creativity at the Walt Disney Company. His name is Duncan Wardle. He has spent his 25-year career at Disney developing some of the most innovative ideas and strategies. Now, I'm truly grateful to have Duncan on the show today. He has an inspiring story, sharing his insights on how to create a culture of innovation and creativity the Disney way. So, without further ado, I'm going to introduce to you guys to our wonderful guest, Duncan Wardle.
When I was a kid, I always had a creative mind.
Okay.
So always drawing and creating, and especially drawing people's like stories.
Okay. I have a slightly contrarian point of view on creative. I hear people say, oh, the creatives, they're on the second floor.
Right.
And you're in finance, so you're not creative. You're a lawyer, you're not creative. You're in sales, you're not creative. You're in operations, you're not creative. Everybody's creative. You know, yes, some people can paint, some people can play music, some people can direct movies. But for me, creativeness is the ability to have a big idea. And I think anybody can have a big idea. We're all born creative. So, for example, but it gets driven out of us as we grow up. Mm-hmm. So, I gave my nephew a bicycle for his 6th birthday. It came in a huge box. It took time to get the bicycle out of the box because it was a really big box. Mm-hmm. So, what did he spend the rest of the day playing with? The box.
Right? The box,
because it could be anything he wanted it to be. and all of us did. You had the box that you played in. It was a castle or a fort or something. And then we go to school.
Right.
And the teacher says, it's just a box. And suddenly all that, children think very expansively. I call it expansive. They think, how might we? Mm-hmm. Everything's possible when you're a child. And suddenly education and corporate life teaches us to think reductively. How can we get things done?
Limited.
And so, so one of the things that if you ask what children are really good at, the first thing that people will say is play. Mm-hmm. And so if you ask companies, are you encouraged to be playful? They'll say no. But here's the importance of playfulness. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. So you've got to close your eyes.
All right.
So where are you usually and what are you doing when you get your best ideas?
Under the shower.
Okay. So, and you could open your eyes. I'll hear in the shower, in the bathroom, driving, commuting, cycling, walking, jogging, doing a jigsaw, drinking coffee. The only two words I've never heard anybody say are at work. Well, that's an issue, right? Because you're supposed to have big ideas at work. So picture that last verbal argument you were in with someone. You know, when you're angry and you're shouting at each other and then you walk away and you begin to relax, you calm down. It's 5 minutes after the argument's over. Or just pops into your head. Most people will say, oh, the one thing I wish I'd said.
Right.
The perfect line, the killer one-liner. If I'd have said that, I'd have had it. Yeah. And so if you ask people, does the killer one-liner come to you during the argument? Everybody laughs. No, it doesn't. It always comes
afterwards.
Yeah. Why? Because being in an argument is the same as being in the office. Your brain is very busy. It's defending itself. In the office is emails, presentations, scheduling. And you hear yourself say, I don't have time to think. And when we don't give ourselves time to think, you can't access 87% of your brain. 87% of your brain is subconscious. Mm-hmm. Only 13% is conscious. We use 13% of our brain 95% of the day. And there's a door. It's easier to remember. It's called the reticular activating system. But there's a door between your conscious and subconscious brain. And when you're busy at work or stressed and arguing, the door, the access, the door between your conscious and subconscious is closed. Mm-hmm. So you can work with 13% of your brain. You can make smart decisions, mm-hmm. but all that subconscious,
you're not using
all that stimulus, yeah. every bicycle ride you've ever been on, place you've ever visited, person you've ever met, challenges you've ever had, it's all back there to serve as unrelated stimulus to help you on your new challenge. But if you can't access it, then that's why we can't have our big ideas when we're stressed at work. Some people will tell you, I get my best ideas falling asleep or waking up. Mm-hmm. And there's an expression from Thomas Edison called when the penny drops. It's that eureka, I've got the big idea.
Right.
It came from Thomas Edison. He used to sit with a penny between his knees at night and with a tin tray on the floor and literally fall asleep in his armchair. And as he would fall asleep, the penny would drop, hit the tin tray, wake him up, and he would write down whatever he was thinking. And I think when you say that to people, they think, well, that's stupid. I would never do that. That's fine. Who had more inventions patented in the 20th century than anybody else? Thomas Edison. Hmm. And so for those people who get their best... So, for example, Google are doing experiments with sleep pods at work because they understand the power. And there are more and more studies around creativity and sleep. We're born with an amazing imagination, right? Think about the imagination as a kid. I saw this little girl in a supermarket last week. She was standing six paces behind her mother.
Yeah.
Her mother was paying. But you could see in the inside the girl's head, she wasn't in the supermarket. I don't know what she was there. I don't know if she was a princess. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she was a superhero, but she was not there.
Right.
It's just their imagination. And again...
It's dreaming.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then corporate life squashes that again.
Yeah.
We are born... The other thing, if you ask what children are very good at, people say they're very curious. Mm. And what children... What's the first question your child asks? Why?
About...
Why? That's how they learn.
Yeah,
and then
we
get to school and we're told there's only one right answer. So we stop looking for the second right answer, which is where innovation comes from. If you ask somebody, why do you go to a Disney park? They'll tell you, I go for the rides. Well, that tells you to spend lots of money on new capital investment. But if you stop for a moment and act like a child and ask why again, they'll say, well, I like Pirates of the Caribbean. And you say, well, why do you like Pirates of the Caribbean? Well, I used to go with my father. Why is that important? I take my son now.
Hmm.
So what that person has just told you on the fourth or fifth why is it's not about new investment in capital attractions.
Right.
It's about memory and nostalgia. But if you stopped at the first why, you'd never find that out. The other one that we're born with is intuition. You can Google this if you don't believe me, because I didn't believe it 6 weeks ago till I found it out.
Okay.
You have 86 billion neurons in your brain, your first brain.
Mm-hmm.
You have 100 billion neurons in your gut, your second brain. Think about the decisions you make. So if you've ever stared at the back of the head of somebody that looks quite attractive and they immediately turn around and stare at you, you had to look away really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
How did they know you were looking at them? Right. But think about the decisions we all make every day. Right. Whether or not you chose to come this morning by bicycle or train, why you decided to wear the blue jacket, why you chose a coffee versus a cappuccino. These decisions are made here in our gut. We said we go with our gut. It's our gut instincts. It's a much more powerful brain than people give it credit for. Here's why I think these four things are important. We're all born creative. We're all born with amazing imagination. Think of the dreams you had last week that were really weird. Tells you still have a great imagination.
Right.
We're all born curious. It just gets squashed out of us.
Mm-hmm.
Albert Einstein once said that I'm not particularly clever. I'm just innately curious. He was. He would just look for things where other people weren't.
Looking for answers. Yeah.
And then we're all born with amazing intuition. I believe these four skill sets will be the strongest skill sets of the next decade for one reason and one reason only. They cannot be programmed into artificial intelligence. You cannot replicate or program creativity. You can't program imagination. You might be able to program curiosity in 15, 20 years from now, but not for now. And you certainly can't program intuition. So it'll be interesting because up to now, and certainly being on the creative side of the house, for the last two decades has been driven by most businesses by critical thinking, strategic analysis, prioritization, strategy. I believe those will be replaced by artificial intelligence.
Right.
But the creative side of the house, I think, will come into a much stronger position simply because you can't program. You could program the robot to paint the Mona Lisa, but she wouldn't know to paint the Mona Lisa unless you programmed her to do it. So, but it'll be an interesting merger. This is Duncan's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
People think I'm... I've spoken twice in the last year with Sophia, Sophia is the most intelligent artificial intelligence robot in the world.
Okay.
When you see an artificial intelligence robot in the movies, like iRobot,
it's
not intimidating because it's in the movie. It's not going to happen.
Mm.
When you're sitting 6 feet away from Sophia and she's making direct eye contact and having a conversation with you, that's, I found it very intimidating. Because when she turned and looked at me, I was like, whoa.
But so real.
Here's the thing. I have a titanium neck. I broke my neck 6 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So it's all metal, the whole thing. Right.
Okay.
But I also worked with a girl when I was at Disney on the Disney Accelerator program. You should look her up. It's amazing work. Children hate prosthetic limbs because they were so ugly.
Mm.
They were all heavy and plastic and made the children look like idiots. They would rather not wear it. They just had their stump. So she came to us and said, I want to build superhero prosthetic arms. And we're like, come on in, let's do it. Mm-hmm. So we made an Iron Man edition, a Darth Vader edition. But the technology involved in this process, using their brain, they can move their fingers.
Wow.
It's
okay.
Like, wow, right? So now, prosthetic arms.
Right.
They're printing hearts in India today on a 3D printer.
Mm.
Not to put in the body, but so the surgeon can see all the issues before they go into surgery. You want good health. You would like to live longer.
Yeah.
So do all of us.
Yeah, everybody wants.
Here's my personal belief in the next... So, my next belief is, this is my iPhone.
Right.
Do I think I will carry this 20 years from now?
No, I don't think so.
It's going to be embedded somewhere.
Right,
of
exactly.
Course. Yep. Better memory. I can call my mom without having to remember the number. So, as we search for better health and everlasting life,
mm-hmm.
we will become secondhand cars. What I mean by that is we'll have more spare parts, just like a second-hand car.
Mm-hmm.
So you get new tires, mm-hmm. you get new engine. We'll get... A heart is a pump. Don't tell me they won't be able to create a heart that goes inside us if mm-hmm. we have coronary disease in the next 20 years. So artificial intelligence with its innovation, humans with creativity, intuition, imagination, we will merge to begin with. At the moment, a lot of people are frightened of artificial intelligence. The human race will become artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
We will merge, I'm sure of it. But in the meantime, because I'll have left the planet by then, those core skills that we all have, some of us haven't used them for a while, but mm-hmm. we all have creativity. We all
yeah,
have
yeah.
So I believe those will be the next strongest skill sets of the next decade.
To constantly upgrade ourselves to be... more efficient, more innovative.
Yeah, and more creative. But just think with technology, how much more creative. Now, there are animators today at Disney creating animation with virtual reality glasses.
Right.
They can create a new character in 3D. So,
wow.
So the old days was the old...
pencil and paper.
Yeah. And they could create shadows, mm-hmm. but not that well. And then, of course, comes graphics online, and they can kind of create shadows, and make them look three-dimensional.
Yeah.
Now they can illustrate the character all the way around.
In a 3D world.
And then put it back in, which is like, wow. So, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah,
it's very cool.
I read about, like, they are now creating VR games in a VR world. So,
amazing. My personal opinion, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think, personally, Duncan's opinion, nobody
right.
else's, Disney's purchase of Fox is, in fact, finally the death of the movie theatre. The movie theatres, if you think about the first time you went to a movie theatre, for me it was 1960-something, I went to see Jungle Book.
And last year
I went to see Infinity War. And if I think about what changed from the first time I walked in the door until now, the cigarette girl's not there anymore.
Mm.
And there's no intermission. But... the movie theatre has iterated. It hasn't innovated. Iteration is, let's make 24 screens. Let's make bigger screens.
Mm-hmm.
That's not innovation. The experience of going to the movie is today, you go at the time they tell you. You watch the previews that they want you to watch. You sit in the seat they tell you to sit in. Yeah, and all that, nothing's changed.
No.
Think about the music industry. 15 years ago, we said, we want to buy a single. And the music industry said, no, you'll buy the album. And so the consumer said, screw you. And iTunes was born. That will happen to the movie industry as well. I think the movies will come direct to consumer. Personally, I think in the next 5 years or less,
mm-hmm.
instead of going to a movie theater, if you want the movie at home on the same day,
right.
you'll pay a huge premium for it, but you will get it. I'm totally convinced of it. And that's an industry in of itself that I think is certainly movie theaters. I think they'll become a premium brand in the next decade. I think fireworks will become a premium brand in the next decade. If you saw the opening of the Olympic Games in Korea.
All right.
If you saw the fireworks show.
Yeah.
It wasn't fireworks. It was drones. So think about Walt Disney World, Florida. Hundreds of thousands of dollars every night on fireworks.
Fireworks. Yeah.
But once you've blown them up, you can't use them again
tomorrow.
Reuse
them, no.
Think about now. Sustainable. I could use them tomorrow and the day after and the day after. Environmentally friendly. There's no noise pollution anymore.
I always
so
yeah,
I could,
smoke.
Right?
And, yeah.
But now I could customize it. I could say, happy birthday, Duncan, in the sky.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
it's like, come on. So I think fireworks will become a premium brand. And I just think the level of disruption in the next decade, I think companies will have to look out. Artificial intelligence is coming. They say it'll take away 10% of the workforce in the United States with it by 2030.
Okay.
So I mean, that's civil unrest type stuff, right? So that's part one. Part two is you've got these legacy brands who've been around from 1910 to 2010, Ford, Disney, Coke, all of them. And for 100 years, we build it, you will come. We build theme parks, you'll come. We make cars, you'll come.
Right.
We make soft drinks with that make you fat and obese, you'll drink them. And that worked for 100 years.
Yeah.
It doesn't work anymore. And the problem for most of these companies is they're run by people who remember the good old days of we build it, they will come. And it's about changing to become consumer-centric. What I mean by that is this. I was asked to do some work recently for the leading tool company on the planet. They make tools, hammers, chisels.
Mm-hmm.
They're the biggest brand on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, what could I teach? I don't know anything about. I don't use tools.
Okay.
So I thought, okay, how can I find out more about their business? So I went down to the biggest DIY store in America. It's called Home Depot.
Yeah.
And I stood in the aisles like some creepy guy, just watching and listening to their consumer at the point of purchase, that decision-making moment when they choose the hammer, which is all sort.
Yeah.
And I went back and talked to them. I said, look, people, the Generation Z, they're coming up underneath the millennials. They're not talking about your brand. They don't care about your brand.
Mm-hmm.
They're not talking about your products, hammers, chisels, or saws. They're not talking about the price, $17.95 or $22.50. They're talking amongst themselves very excitedly and passionately. We're going to build our dream kitchen, our dream living room. Oh, my God, we're going to build our dream house. So this company doesn't have a purpose, and companies now need to have a purpose. Their purpose for the last 100 years has been quarterly results. Companies that continue to remain focused on quarterly results will be gone in less than maybe three decades, because this generation will not accept it anymore. They want to know what you believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said to this company, I said, look, listening to their consumer about their dream house, their dream living room, their dream bar, I said, your purpose could be, if you choose to accept it, is you're the brand who helps people build their dreams. Well, that's a very noble cause for a tool company. And if you're the brand who can help people build their dreams, what other lines of business could you get into? Could you get into education? Could you do hotels? Could you do theme parks? Could you think about what else they could do? And they looked at me like I was mad.
Right.
Because we build it, they will come. And all of their profits today are through tools. And that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But I said, guys, you're going to have to get out of the tool industry. And they were like, why? I said, well, that's easy. We're printing hearts in Hyderabad today on a 3D printer. We're printing houses in Houston, Texas today, houses on a 3D printer. So go to the year 2030. Now, I don't know how big Amazon is here, but in the States, it's huge.
Right.
Last year, they spent easily $200 billion, I think, on shipping, production, and storage.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got a 3D printer in your house 10 years from now, right, you could probably print... don't know, 20% of what you buy on Amazon. This coffee cup, you'll print that in your house 20 years from now. This table, you might have to go to a local printer's because it'll be too big for your printer. The chair, you'll print it in your house. If you can print pretty much anything you want on demand 10, 15 years from today, what will you be using the hammer, the chisel, or the saw for?
They'll
be in a museum. But because they're maniacally focused on short-term quarterly results, what are we doing to drive profits in the next 3 months? They're not looking out at what's coming.
They're not looking ahead what's coming.
And they don't have a purpose. So, for example, here we are, the Apple iPhone. I have one.
Yeah, everybody has one these days.
But if you stand next to somebody in a concert, and you've got the iPhone taking a picture. I was at a Phil Collins concert recently. I'm taking my picture, and the guy next to me with his Samsung, I was like, oh, shit, what's the point? His camera was so much better than mine. So, it was so superior. And I don't know if you use Siri.
No.
Siri with a Dutch accent or an English accent is a total waste of time.
Yeah.
So I might say, could you call my wife? And she'll say, you need directions to Newcastle? You're like, no, I want to call my wife. However, we still buy it.
Yeah, that's something new. And yeah.
Well, but we're buying the Apple purpose. We're buying what Apple... Apple says, my purpose is to help the world think different. Mm-hmm. How do we do that? We make great products. Dell says, we just make computers. Well, not so much anymore, my friends. Mm-hmm. So it's people are buying... This generation are buying stories.
Right.
They're not necessarily buying products and services anymore. They want to know what you believe in. What mm-hmm. do you stand for as a company? Most companies stand for quarterly results. And this generation will take them. I don't care how big they are as a brand. I don't care if they've been around for 100 years. They won't be around 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Ford makes cars.
Right.
Really well. Yeah. And they're really good at it because they've got 100 years worth of experience. Mm-hmm. That's their biggest barrier to innovation. Because they know how to do it so well. They can't think differently. Mm-hmm. But now, if you've got a company like Apple and Google have come into the market in the last 5 years, hey, we're going to make cars. We don't know how to make them, but we don't think you need a steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, which of those brands do you think is going to be around 10 years from today making cars and which won't? The legacy brands are in real trouble because they know they've been so successful one way for 100 years, mm-hmm. but that model doesn't work anymore. But most of their senior executives still remember that, and they're having a really hard... If you ask any executive today, are you consumer-centric? They'll say yes. And then I follow up and say, have you spent a day in the house of one of your consumers? Nobody can put their hand up. Then you're not consumer-centric.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I had a chance. 10 years ago, I got a call from the chair. And he said, I was head of global public relations at the time, and I was doing all these crazy stunts, sending Buzz Lightyear into space, doing halftime shows, etc. And he said, look, you're the guy with all the big ideas that actually gets them done.
Right, yeah.
You're going to be in charge of innovation creativity. I was like, well, what the hell's that? He goes, I don't know. We just need to do more of it.
So
like,
when was this?
2007.
Okay.
2007.
If you take us back to the beginning at Disney, did you always want to work at Disney? How did you...
Well, interesting, because you talked about drawing as a little boy.
Right.
I still have a drawing of... I drew Mickey, Minnie, Donald and Goofy when I was 6.
Oh, wow.
I still have the pictures. And when I was at school, I was a small boy. I went down to my travel agent and I lied.
Right.
I said I was going to do a school project on Disney and could I have a brochure? You know, the little brochures.
Right.
Oh, that was like a shrine in my room. And then a friend of my mother's went to this place called America and went to a Disneyland. Mm-hmm. And they brought me back a keyring, a bronze keyring. And I tell you, that was a shrine in my room for me. I dreamt of working for Disney all my life. and when I was at college in Edinburgh, I was looking on the notice board to see if I'd been chosen for the rugby team for the weekend. There was a picture of Mickey Mouse. I thought, what the hell's that?
Mm-hmm.
It was a chance to be interviewed to go and work for Disney in Florida. So I thought, oh, come on, let's do this.
Yeah.
So I started as a barman in the Rose and Crown pub in 1986 at Epcot, where I met my wife. If you've been to Epcot, you have all the countries.
Right.
Well, there was Mexico was on the other side of the lagoon.
Mm.
And these were 1,000 students living away from home for the first time. In one village for a year. It was like the Olympic Village on steroids.
So it's like an exchange year.
It was party central, of course.
Right.
And so the Mexicans just seemed to be having better parties than everybody else, and that's when I discovered tequila.
Okay.
So I married a Mexican. We've been married 30 years.
Oh, wow.
She used to work for Disney as well. So our house was, it was ridiculous. It was like
Disney were also
there. Yeah, it was terrible. So then we made a conscious decision to get rid of all of it because it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But then, of course, you have children, and it starts to creep back in.
Mm.
And so, but 10 years ago, I got this call. He said, right, you're going to be in charge of innovation creativity. I was like, oh, shit, what do I do? So we surveyed 5,000 people at Pixar, Marvel, Lucasfilms, ESPN, ABC, Disney Imaginary. What are the barriers to being more innovative and creative in a corporate environment?
Mm.
We found five, the big ones. Number one, time to think. I don't have time to think. Still considered the biggest barrier to innovation by most companies.
Mm.
Google has a policy called 20% time. They give their engineer 20% time to think. In return, they got Google goggles, Google Maps, self-driving cars, and Gmail. So it's not a bad return on investment. Mm. Most companies don't. They don't give their employees time to think. And if you look at most people's diaries for the workday, they look like the barcode on a packet
of
cereal. Completely. It's completely full. And you hear yourself say, I don't have time to think. That's a big barrier.
Yeah.
Number two is, at the time, we all had a different definition of innovation creativity. And creativity is open to interpretation, and it should be. But when you're trying to change culture in an organization of hundreds of thousands of people, you need one definition. Mm. And so we created our own. And then the next one was we were a risk-averse organization because we have quarterly results. And the story I told you early on about the tool company, people need to get past risk aversion of quarterly results if they're going to survive.
Right.
Innovation isn't... when I was put in charge of the team, it was a nice to have. Hey, let's have an innovation team. Now, for the big legacy brands, it's survival. There's no question about that. Then consumer insight being underused. That's a polite way of saying being ignored by the product-centric companies. And then last one was ideas get stuck, diluted, or killed as they move through an organization. So that was kind of the big five. So we decided to work a process around that and worked with a lot of the big innovation and creative companies to create a new process. Today, a lot of people call it design thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process where you start with the consumer in mind. So, for example, we've created a tool. Actually, Walt created the tool, 1940. He showed Fantasia in the movie. Have you seen Fantasia?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, but Walt in 1940 was such a visionary. In the scene, drip, 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 little April showers, he wanted it mist pumped into the theatre. And the theatre owner said, no, don't be ridiculous. It's too expensive and people don't want to be wet.
Right.
And he said, well, how about heat during the scene of Cherbourg, and not Chernobyl, Cherbourg and Night on a Bare Mountain? And they're like, no, Walt, it's too expensive. And you don't own the theatre, so no.
Mm.
So Walt was very frustrated. So he used this tool, I call it What If. You list all the rules of your challenge. So he listed the rules of going to a movie theatre. Dark, dirty, set time, got to watch the preview. I, Walt, can't control the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, what if I could? Well, that wasn't provocative enough. So he said, well, what if I take my movies out of the theatre?
Mm.
Okay, well, imagine a world where I can make that work. Well, if I take my movies out of the theatre, they can't be two-dimensional anymore, because they'd fall over and people wouldn't be able to see them. What if I made my movies three-dimensional? Well, if I made my movies three-dimensional, I'd have to have people play the roles. Well, if I had people playing the roles, Cinderella can't live next to Davy Crockett or Jack Sparrow because people wouldn't be immersed in her story.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have to put them in different... Oh, I know, I'll call it Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest creative suggestion of the 20th century. Fast forward to 2011. We were faced with a challenge. Had we have asked the question that all companies ask themselves, how might we make more money?
Mm-hmm.
We would have iterated. We'd have put the gate price up 2% to get into the park.
Yep.
You'd have paid more. You'd have grumbled. We'd have made 2% more money. That's iteration. That's not innovation. Instead of asking that question, we turned the question on its head. And instead of saying, how might we make more money? We said, how might we solve the biggest consumer pain point? And for anybody who's been to a Disney park, if you say, what's the biggest pain point? They immediately tell you the lines, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, what if there were no lines? That was a stupid suggestion in 2011. I said, well, what if there's no gate at the entrance to our park? What if people could just walk in?
Yeah.
What if there was no front desk in our hotels? They just go to their room.
Mm-hmm.
What if they didn't stand in line to pay for merchandise? So fast forward, we looked around the world and we found RFID technology. Already existed.
Right. Yeah.
We just put it in a plastic band, called it Disney's Magic Band.
Mm.
When you arrive at the hotel now, you don't check in. You touch your door with your band and you walk in.
Automatically.
You swipe to get into the park. It has your reservations for your favorite attractions and character meet and greet, so you don't stand in line. If you want an item of merchandise, you touch it once, it goes to your hotel room. You touch it twice, it goes to your house. You want your hot dog with your pickles on the side and light mayonnaise, you save it on your iPhone. I'm going to Pinocchio's Village House for lunch. Save. Click. I walk into the restaurant 2 hours later. Restaurant knows I'm here, knows I want my pickles on the side with the light, and I'm at table 47. Food comes fresh to me. Now, again, had we have asked how might we make more money, we'd have made 2% profit margin.
Mm-hmm.
Because we would put the gate price up. But by turning it and asking how might you solve the biggest consumer pain point, on average today, a Disney guest has somewhere between an hour and a half and 2 hours of free time that they didn't have 4 years ago. And what is it people do with their free time in Disney parks? They spend money.
Right.
The single biggest revenue driver generating idea of merchandise and food and beverage since Disneyland opened its doors on July 17th, 1955. No capital investment required. No new rides, no new fireworks, no new parades, no new lands, no new hotels. Software technology. Now, not cheap, of course,
but
a lot cheaper than a whole new land. Now, people talk, oh, we've got big data. Oh, What are you doing with it? Oh, we don't know. Disney's Magic Band live every second of every day.
Everything.
You are telling us what you like and what you don't. Mm. If you go this way, we know that attraction's more popular. But to the point of guest satisfaction, I can now text you. Let's say I know you're Mr. Smith. I know you're standing in line for Space Mountain. I know your daughter, Sally. Yeah, I know it's your last day, and I know you haven't met Anna and Elsa yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're in line for an hour, because I can see the line. So I can text you and say, hey, Anna and Elsa are right outside the door. That makes you look like a hero.
Okay.
So intent to return, intent to recommend goes up. And so, but then the finance boys roll in. They say, oh, we can lay off all our staff.
Mm.
And I'm watching it, the hospitality industry at the moment in particular. All the big hotels, the Hiltons, the Marriotts, they're all in this arms race of technology.
Right.
So that the guest doesn't have to interact with anybody. You can order your margarita independently on your iPhone. You can track its progress. And for a lot of industries, that may make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But this is called the hospitality industry.
Right.
People like people. And so if you enter an arms race, nobody wins.
No.
Even on technology. So we tried an experiment because the finance guys rolled in and said, hey, we could get rid of all of our front desk employees. I said, well, yeah, okay, yeah, you can. But I said, I'd like to try an experiment before you do. I'd like to bring them out from behind the front desk because we don't need them there anymore.
Mm.
And I want to make them personal concierges to everybody who can't afford to stay on the fifth floor. So if somebody wants to book a character meet and greet with Mickey Mouse, if they don't have a personal concierge, they're not going to get one. But now everybody has access. So intent to return, intent to recommend went up through the roof. So we did it on board the Disney cruise ships. And we asked our Disney stateroom hosts, instead of cleaning cabins for 8 hours, we want you to clean cabins for 7 hours. And for 1 hour, we want you to actually spend time talking with our guests.
Mm. Okay.
So their job was more enjoyable.
Mm.
Intent to return, intent to recommend went up higher than any capital investment we made on board our ships. And high tech enables high touch.
Yeah.
If you choose to go there. And again, not... You
know, it gives us more free time to...
Yes.
We will have an amazing time coming up. A lot of tasks, like simple tasks, taking over technology.
And giving your brain more. So, for example, 5 years ago, no, maybe 10, if I asked you to name the telephone numbers of all of your family members and your friends, you couldn't do it.
No, right.
Now...
It's instantly...
You can't even remember your wife's phone number.
Your own phone number.
Because your brain is so smart. It says, I don't have to remember that anymore. I could release that capacity to the iPhone so I could think of other things.
Right.
So, yeah, it's... Yeah.
It gives us more time to be creative at the end. So,
and so many people have been told for so long, we're not creative. You're not creative. Mm. Bullshit. Everybody's creative. Everybody was a child once. They just had it squashed out of them through education and corporate life. Given the opportunity, I do an experiment with big audiences like yesterday, and I'll ask them who's creative. 10% of them will put their hands up. And then I ask them, who was a child once? And they all laugh and they're, oh yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And then I do an experiment with them, and I get them to interview each other. And so, for example, the first exercise I might do is I'll ask somebody to be an expert at designing parachutes for elephants. So you're the expert, and I'm going to interview you for 2 minutes about your job. And you listen to the stuff that people come up with in 30 seconds. Mm. Everybody's creative.
Everybody has imagination.
Yes.
Yeah. So you worked like 25 years at Disney and now started your own company. What gave you the idea to... To start this company?
No, it's a fair chat. There's a gap. I believe there's a gap in the market.
Right.
How do I know that? There are three models for innovation. I tried two. Neither of them worked.
Okay.
Option A, you go and hire the top innovation consultants, the IDOs, the gurus, and they'll come in and they'll run an innovation project for your company for 3 months.
Mm.
And they'll give you a very large invoice
and
you'll pay. And then they'll leave. And you think, okay, what is their recommendation good? Yes, they're very good at what they do.
Hmm.
What have we learned about how to do what they do, about their process? Nothing. Why? Well, they don't want you to know how they do what they do, or you wouldn't hire them again.
Hmm.
So option A, if you're trying to change a culture, most companies need to change their cultures to be more innovative and creative. The consultants aren't really helping with that piece. So, option B, a lot of companies, let's create an innovation department. We did it. The message you send to everybody else in the organization is, hey, you don't have to be innovative. These guys do. Well, that's ridiculous because most innovation departments are, what, 15, 20 people in an organization of 100,000. Are you changing the culture? No, you're kidding yourself. Mm. So I thought, what if we could create a toolkit, literally a toolkit, that takes creativity and makes it tangible, takes innovation and makes it easy, and makes the process fun. Mm. And companies push back at first. They say, well, why do you want to make it fun? We need to drive business results. Of course you need to drive business results. You can't change a culture unless Fred and Sally, who've worked for you for a year, 5 years, 15 years, 20 years, they have to want to use that toolkit when you're not around. Mm-hmm. So you better make it easy, tangible, and fun. Mm-hmm. And that's all I've done. I've created the design thinking process, or creative problem-solving process. It's used by a lot of the big innovation agencies. All I did was dumb it down and make it fun. Okay. And so, and I love workshops.
Right.
Because when you do a keynote, I get lots of invites. Could you come and talk?
Right.
Yes, I can come and talk. In a one-hour talk, you can inspire and motivate. You cannot help. I just think, I get time.
Hmm.
Companies don't want to give their employees time.
Yep.
But in a one-day workshop, I can get in a room with people right at the beginning of the morning who think they're not creative and they can't innovate. And by the 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I can give them most of the design thinking process, but I don't talk. People don't learn by listening, they learn by doing. So I give them the challenge at the beginning of the morning. They use the tools all throughout the day, the what-if tool that I described Walt Disney used.
Right.
And they use all the tools throughout the day. And when I leave at 5 o'clock, they know how to use the tools tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
It's not theoretical. It's not. It's practice.
Yeah.
And the first, I've been left Disney, what, a year and a half ago?
Yeah, okay.
So this week, I left Florida on Monday. I was in Oslo on Tuesday. I'm in Amsterdam today, and I'll be in Vancouver tomorrow. Today. I'm flying to Vancouver today. And then next week is Vancouver, Houston, New Orleans, and I'm back to Lisbon. It's crazy. It's just taken off. And I think it's just because you're making it easy, tangible, and fun. That's all.
Mm.
And you can't change cultures if you don't. You've got to give an organization something that everybody can use, to use on creative problem solving for big challenges and small challenges.
Okay.
And unless they want to use it, you can't change the culture. And so that's what I consider to be the gap in the market. And so far it seems to be, because it
seems working.
Very successful. Yeah.
So this can be used for any kind of problem solving or innovation.
Yes.
And can you tell us something a little bit about the toolkits? I read something about the energizers.
So I do an energizer for a very simple reason.
Right.
An energizer, so for example, I'll ask people to talk about designing parachutes for elephants.
Hmm.
Okay. And I'll listen. All I'm waiting for is laughter. And I know I'll get laughter in the first 10 seconds. Why? The moment I get laughter, remember I talked about when you're stressed at work or when you're in an argument, the door between your conscious and subconscious brain is closed and you can't have a big idea.
Right.
But the moment you step in the shower or go for a bicycle, that door opens just enough that you can still make conscious, rational, and good decisions, but you can have your big ideas.
Hmm.
Or the only reason I do the energizer is because I'm opening the door between your conscious and subconscious brain. Simple as that. And they work really easily.
So as soon as we are...
As soon as I hear laughter... I know that I've put you back metaphorically back in the shower.
Right. Okay. So as soon as we can access our subconscious minds, mm-hmm. then we are able to
have big
come
ideas.
Up with. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's also, and there's lots of, so for example, there's an exercise, there's one tool that transfers power of my idea to our idea. And that's very powerful, particularly inside big organizations, because you have to get everybody else along to get it done. And until you can transfer the power of my idea to our idea, your idea is not going anywhere. And so there's a very simple tool that helps people transfer that power of my idea to our. We also teach them how to use storytelling. Because when you're trying to pitch an idea, there's a couple of things at play. So I'll try an experiment. I'm not sure if it'll work, but I'll try. So close your eyes. How many days are there in September?
31.
30.
30.
Okay, so I'll ask him, you can open your eyes. If I ask a big audience, you can open your eyes. If I ask a big audience how many days are there in September, people will say, 30. And I'll ask them, how did you know? And one of them will say, oh, I remember the rhyme. 30 days has September, blah, 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 and November, all the rest, and blah, blah, blah. Somebody else will put their knuckles up. I don't know if you ever see people put their knuckles up like this, and they go, January, so the knuckle.
Right.
February, March, April, May. So all the knuckles are 30.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Somebody else will just say, oh, I could just see it on a calendar. What each of them have told me is the person who remembers the rhyme, because they learnt it when they were five.
Right.
But they instantly told me that's how they remembered it. Mm. You've just told me you're an auditory learner. Mm. You learn by listening.
Right.
The person who can just see it on a calendar by closing their eyes, they're a visual learner. And the person that put their fists up just told me you're a kinesthetic learner.
Mm.
So the important thing when you're trying to convey your ideas to somebody else is two-thirds of your audience do not share your preferred learning style. So if you just stand there with a PowerPoint presentation, the kinesthetic people are going to fall asleep.
Right.
And the visual people have already fallen asleep. Mm. And so the other thing that I think is incredibly... I learned a lesson. I mean, I work for a storytelling company. But boy, did I learn a lesson about 8 years ago about the power of storytelling.
Okay.
This was just in your face.
Yeah.
Because people talk storytelling. Oh, it's powerful. And you're like, well, okay, but give me a really good example.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
So we gave out a bid to four architectural firms to come in and help us redesign our retail dining and entertainment complex in Florida.
Okay.
And the winning bid was worth a lot of money. So they spent easily over $100,000 each on their presentations.
Wow.
They took a room four times bigger than this and created a model of this entire future retail dining, right down to the windows where the little ladies were. I mean, it was wow.
Insane, yeah.
The first three companies presented an architectural rendition of what this place could look like, the actual physical model. The next room, the last room we walked into, was empty. Lights were low. There was a little old man sitting in a rocking chair. He said, come on in. Sit down. Close your eyes. I want to tell you a story about a place called Disney Springs, where a young man called Walt Disney met a young girl called Lillian in 1914. And he went on to talk for 3 or 4 minutes. By the time he'd finished, half of them was crying, half of them was smiling, and everybody knew which concept we were going with.
Wow.
Because he had painted a picture. He had told us a story. And that's the winning bid. And that, to me, instantly told me the power of storytelling. There's another tool I use called Naive Experts. Do you have a pen?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. We're going to try an experiment.
Okay.
Can I have a piece of paper?
Yeah.
Great. Hang on. I'm going to draw mine first.
Okay.
Then you're going to draw yours. And we'll just see how it works. Okay, so I'm going to name an object, and I'm going to give you 7 seconds to draw it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. A house. Right. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Okay, so there's yours. And there's mine. Most people, when given that choice, are going to draw... We always draw the door at the ground.
Yeah.
Most of us will put it in the middle. Most people will draw two windows. Don't know why. They'd always put bars over them, and the roof will always be a triangle.
Okay.
Why? Because my river of experience, my river of expertise, my river of thinking tells me that's what a house should look like.
Yeah.
So I had 12 architects in a room to design a retail dining and entertainment complex for Hong Kong Disneyland. They were white, they were male, they were over 50, they were architects, and they were American. So I brought into the room my naive expert. A naive expert is chosen for one reason and one reason only. They do not know what you're working on, and they do not work in your industry. They will not solve the challenge for you, but they will ask the silly question that you're too embarrassed to ask in front of all of your peers. They will throw out the audacious idea because they don't report to you, and they're ungovernable. So my naive expert for the day was a chef from Hong Kong. She was female, under 30, Chinese, and a chef. So thought completely differently from them.
Mm-hmm.
In the same amount of time that they all drew this,
right.
She drew dim sum architecture,
okay,
which was that bamboo dish with a pork ball, a shrimp ball, and a chimney.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all laughed because we realized we'd all stayed in our river of thinking what a house should look like.
Mm.
She gave us permission to get out of our river of thinking and consider audacious architecture. Well, if any company in the world could consider audacious architecture, it would be Disney. Dim sum architecture. So somebody slapped a post-it note over her picture on the way out the door. It said, distinctly Disney, authentically China, authentically Chinese. 7 years later, the strategic brand position for Shanghai Disney Resort became distinctly Disney, authentically Chinese.
Oh, right.
So, okay.
So we are sometimes afraid.
Here's where organizations miss the point. They think diversity is political correctness, and they have their percentages and their quotas because they're frightened of getting sued. What they fail to realize is diversity is innovation. It's quite simple. If somebody looks different from you, they think different from you. Mm. And if they think different from you, they will help you think differently.
Okay.
And so I bring in somebody who is very different to everybody else into every session I run. Again, their role is not to solve the challenge. That's an unfair expectation. Their role is to say something that will make you think differently. Mm. So that's one of the tools in the toolkit.
And what is your purpose with your company?
My purpose is I believe every single person on the planet is creative, and I'm here to remind them and show them how to be again. It's as simple as that. And I hate it when I hear people say, you're not creative. Mm. I think the creatives, the special bullshit.
Yeah,
we're all creative. We all have an amazing imagination. We were all born curious. We're all born with intuition. We've just forgotten how.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my purpose. Everybody's creative. Well, and I love seeing the smile on their face when they remember that they can do it. That gives me, you know, when you get in a room with people who think who've been told for so... Yesterday, I worked with DeBrow, lawyers.
Right.
Who've probably been told for 20 years, you're not creative. Hmm. They were amazingly creative and amazingly innovative. They've just been told so long, they're not, they've forgotten how. And it's about giving people back the tools to do it again.
Hmm. And that's where you...
I love it.
Yeah.
I love getting in a room with people
right.
who don't think they're creative, don't think they can innovate, and by the end of the day, they realize they can.
That's a great mission.
Thank you.
So I really enjoyed hearing about your story and how you learned all these things at Disney, and now that has led to set up your own business.
Yeah, and it's nice because I get to travel. So last year I took on 3 not-for-profits,
right?
And I said, hey, who wants help? Tell me your project, and if I like it, there was more than that. I'll come and help you for X amount of days. I won't charge you any money. So I got to work in Australia with a woman. She was 78. She is very passionate about the deforestation that's taking place and killing all the koalas. And so I went to help her with a project for a week. And then I went out to Mozambique to help a bunch of kids create an irrigation system for a village. And it was just the smiles in their face. And this woman, 78, but the passion with which she talks about what she does is like listening to a 16-year-old girl who's just met her favorite rock star.
Right.
And those are the most rewarding. I mean, I don't do many of them. Most of my work is corporate work. Mm-hmm. But when you get to work on those, they're very rewarding. But equally, though, you get inside a corporation, and I love it when you see these people who've been in the business for 20 years. They come in very cynical, like, who's this guy about creativity? Mm. Is it going to be bullshit? And that's a challenge for me. I'll take the challenge. Yeah. And I like seeing the smile on their faces when I leave, when they realize they can do it for themselves.
Right. Oh, you have so much experience and so many references, like sending up Buzz Lightyear in space and coming out with all these big ideas at Disney. So it's easy for you to show examples of what you have
also,
done.
But it's also good. I work for the entertainment industry for so much, but now in the last 2 years, pharmaceutical industry, automotive industry, legal industry, financial industry, food and beverage, and it's great because you can borrow ideas from each industry, or at least the underlying principles, back to help you innovate in a different industry. And that to me has been one of the biggest learnings in the last 12 months, is what you can learn from one industry that you can apply to another to help them think differently again.
Okay. Cool. Duncan, it was really nice talking to you.
Thank you very much. Good luck with the podcast.
Thank you so much for your time. We will be sharing this.
Send me a link when it comes out.
Yeah. What's the best place that people can find you from?
Oh, duncanwardle.com.
All right, that's easy.
DuncanWardle.
And you have also workshops coming up as well?
I do. I'm actually working with a gentleman here to try and create... So I'm so convinced that even the conference industry is broken.
Hmm.
Think about the first conference you went to 20 years ago and the one you went to last year. They pack them with speakers, right?
Yeah.
By the time you leave, here's what happens. You leave inspired and motivated and you think, I'm going to change the world.
And a week later, somebody says, hey, how was that conference in Amsterdam? And this totally blank look comes over your face. You think, oh, yeah, that was right. I was at a conference. What have I learned? What could I use tomorrow to help me think differently and grow my business? And the answer is nothing. And I'm so determined to break up the conference industry because it's broken. Not broken. It worked one way for so long, but now it needs to change. And so I believe people learn by doing, not by listening. So I've started. I am actually next week will be my first one. I'm going to do a first open masterclass for anybody who wants to sign up. And so doing my first one in Vancouver next Thursday. And it'll be a full-day workshop for anybody who wants to sign up. And so, yeah, I do them inside companies, but I thought, hey, what if I could open it up to the... So I'm coming back to the Netherlands in November. I don't have a date yet. And I hope to be announcing that we'll be doing some here too.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this podcast with Duncan Wardle as much as we did creating it. You can find more information about Duncan in the show notes. And if there is any question about the podcast, any question, get back to me via Instagram, via the DM. Well, if you haven't subscribed to the show yet, please take out your phone right now and subscribe to the Creative Insights podcast so that you don't have to miss another episode. Also, all of our episodes are on my website, mikereinhardt.com. I would love to hear your feedback about the episodes, and I also appreciate if you would leave me a review on iTunes. I have more episodes coming up, brewing with ideas and stories that I can't wait to share with you. Once again, my name is Mike, and I'm here to inspire you with amazing stories and insights from inspiring entrepreneurs, innovators, and hustlers. You can follow me online everywhere as Mike Reinhardt on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and my website, mikereinhardt.com. Thanks for listening, and see you in the next episode.